This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know that feeling when you have something that's really been bothering you, or when you've been fixating on something in your life that's looming large in your mind? We all carry around different stressors in our lives, big and small, and I think we inherently know that when we keep them bottled up inside, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, and to figure out how to work through whatever it is that's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for people who have experienced major trauma. There are plenty of benefits it can have for everyone. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. And don't underestimate the power of boundaries either. Those are super important. If you've been wondering if you should give therapy a try, check out BetterHelp. It's a fully online experience and designed from the ground up to be convenient and customizable to your schedule. To get started, you just have to fill out a brief questionnaire that will match you up with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no extra charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/filmdaily today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/filmdaily.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for November 16th, 2017. On today's podcast, we're going to be talking about a bunch of news, including Joss Whedon's Justice League tweets, MoviePass, the trailer for Rampage, a possible Batman replacement, Fantastic Beasts 2, and Multiple Men, and in the mailbag, we'll be talking about movie trailers that show no footage from the movie itself. This is Peter Soretta, and joining me on today's podcast is Slash Film senior writer Ben Pearson.
Hey, what's going on?
And Slash Film writer Huai Tran Bui.
Hey, everyone.
Guys, let's jump into the news. First up is Justice League, which, by the way, you just saw last night, Ben, right?
I did.
That does not sound good.
No, it's not. I did not like this movie, Peter.
Okay.
I thought that I was talking to my wife afterwards, and I was like, I'm scared of Peter asking me what I thought about it on the podcast because I'm just going to derail the entire thing. I don't know how to explain how I didn't like this movie in a short, concise way. But
and the only thing I'd say is don't, you know, spoil anything, obviously. Think any of it can be spoiled, but
yeah, I honestly think they're so the Flash is meant to be, you know, like this funny, quirky character. I didn't really think any of his jokes worked except for one that I won't mention because it was surprising and funny and it came near the end of the movie. I thought none of the I don't think it's a spoiler to say that Superman is in the film, right? Because like yeah. Henry Cavill is second billed. I won't say what he does or what happens with him, but I didn't think any of that storyline worked. I thought the villain, as we'll talk about in just a second, was really an embarrassment when it comes to the comic book movie villains. Really, really terrible stuff. I will agree
that the villain is probably the worst in comic book movie history, or at least modern comic book movie history, but
it's pretty close. Yeah.
I would also say that the villain in Wonder Woman is very close to this level of bad, and people gave that a pass. So
David Thewlis was trying his best, okay?
Yeah, we'll get into that. But okay. I don't want to, again, I don't want to derail this whole thing. I just, I really went in with like zero expectations. And I will say that it is, I thought it was better than Batman vs. Superman. That movie I found to be a punishing experience. I've said that before. And I really stand by that. I feel like that's a really hard movie to watch. This Justice League does not feel like that hard of a movie to watch. I don't think it's a good movie, but I didn't hate myself when I was watching it. And it's 2 hours and it doesn't really, I wasn't like, oh my God, this is way too long. This is, you know, a total slog or anything like that. I just don't think it's very good. It's not like, you know, bad on a legendary level. It's just not a great movie. So make of that what you will.
Okay. Because everything needs to be boiled down into a simple number. What would you give it out of 10?
I've not thought about this. I would probably give it a 4 out of 10 or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's probably, yeah, I think so. And I would give Batman vs. Superman like a 2 out of 10 or something like that.
Yeah. And both of those are way below the averages on Rotten Tomatoes, by the way. Rotten Tomatoes, the score, should be mentioned, actually came out today, and it's 40%, which is lower than we expected. But the critic average is like 51%, so that's like a 5 out of 10. But still, 4 out of 10 film critics like the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yes. Okay. So, anyways, all that is to prelude into the story, because Joss Whedon, he liked to tweet on Twitter. What's going on?
Yes. So, Vanity Fair writer Joanna Robinson, who co-hosts a lot of podcasts that we feature on Slash Film, she tweeted that Justice League's Steppenwolf is the worst comic book movie villain of all time, and not even Malekith the Accursed comes close. That's the villain from Thor: The Dark World. So Joss Whedon liked this tweet, and that is sort of freaking some people out, because Whedon very famously co-wrote Justice League. He came on and ended up directing the reshoots and sort of oversaw the film and took it over the finish line when original director Zack Snyder had to step away due to a family tragedy. So the DC hardcore fans are like freaking out and going off on Joss Whedon for liking this tweet. I don't really think it's that big of a deal. And I also think that he's right. Steppenwolf really, really is a terrible character. I won't get into a full takedown, but I think the most important thing for me is the digital effects that brought this character to life are just like next level terrible. Like it seems like Injustice: Gods Among Us, DC and Warner Brothers, superhero video game, like fighting game. It seems like this character was just ripped straight out of that game and dropped into a movie for a film with a budget of like reportedly $300 million. There is no excuse for this character to look that bad. It's inexcusable.
It feels to me that they knew this part of the movie wasn't working and kind of just gave up on this and like, let's put the money for the reshoots into the stuff that we can help.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I think, you know, as far as Joss Whedon liking this tweet, you know, this movie was like the wheels had started churning on this long before he came on board. So it's not necessarily his, his fault per se that Steppenwolf is even in the movie. So I don't know. I find it to be like, yeah, he sort of has a sense of humor about himself and like can at least acknowledge criticisms, which I think is something that we should be celebrating instead of, you know, freaking out about. But anyway, that's neither here than there. So.
I think it's just of bad taste in like this industry, or it's considered bad taste in this industry to be involved in a production and to say something negative. Like, you cannot find a filmmaker today that will say something negative about their movie that is coming out.
But he didn't even say anything negative. He just liked a tweet, and then DC fans went up in arms.
But liking is kind of
an endorsement.
I guess in this new internet language.
And then but there are plenty of people who, you know, denounce their movies after the publicity cycle has, you know, come to a close. So it's not uncommon for people to be like, yeah, we sort of whiffed on that one, but normally they just do it like a year or two later. So it's not that crazy, but anyway.
Yeah, you can read the whole article on SlashFilm.com, and Ben goes much deeper into his hate for this villain there. So you can read all that. But moving on from that, we've been talking about MoviePass. The last few months, they announced a $9.95 all you can eat or almost all you can eat monthly subscription service for movies, and now they have announced that price is going lower to $6.95 a month if you sign on for a year. HD, what do we know?
So merely 3 months after MoviePass took the movie-going world by storm with its $9.95 subscription offer, it is offering a limited-time promotion that will last 12 months, which you will pay $89.95 upfront for an annual subscription, plus a $6.55 processing fee. So it's a new annual promotion that we're not sure how long it will be available for, but that they're promoting on their website, and they're also planning an announcement with further details tomorrow. But it's really interesting because it's the only plan that will be available for new subscribers up until the limited offer expires. And current subscribers can also up their plan, I guess, to the $6.95 per month deal. And so the only requirement is that you pay up front, and it will go on for a month until it reverts back to the $9.95 per month deal.
But HT, what happens if I move, or if, like, you know, theaters stop supporting MoviePass in my area? Can I cancel this promotion?
You can cancel this promotion, but there is a catch. If you want to cancel your annual subscription, you may cancel your annual subscription at any time. However, there are no refunds for the remaining unused time on your plan. If you change your mind, you will not be able to set up a new account for 9 months. So that's pertaining to the new subscribers who start off with MoviePass through the annual plan, which
So basically
sounds,
you're screwed.
Yeah, basically you're screwed. They don't have any details on if you are a current subscriber with the $9.95 plan and then you go up to the annual plan but decide to go back. So that's something that some details that they might hash out tomorrow when they send out more details.
I don't know. To me, this sounds very, very shady because it seems like, you know, obviously they're losing money with this service. I can't imagine that they are making money. You know, people are paying $10 a month already, and they see one movie a month in any major metropolitan area, and, you know, they're losing money instantly. If they're seeing multiple movies a month, they're losing a lot more money. So it just seems to me that they're trying to raise a lot of capital right now and build their subscription base to maybe sell it off later on to be like, you know, we have a million subscriber. I don't know. It just seems rather shady. Ben, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I echo exactly what you just said. I've dealt with enough people, enough sort of business people, and seen people, you know, frankly, pretty dumb business people try to, just basically corral as much money as possible in order to, like, leverage a company. And this seems sort of like that. You know, I can't think of another reason why they would. First of all, $9.95, like you said, it's already a pretty low price. So dropping it more means that they just want more people to subscribe, and then forcing them to pay up front very clearly indicates that they are just looking to get as much money in their pockets as possible right now. It seems like this is like almost like a last ditch effort. Like they're already, you know, having the problems that many analysts suspected that they might when they first sort of announced this thing. So I don't know if that's happening. That's just pure speculation on my part. But it seems like with these decisions that they're definitely gearing up for something. We just don't know what it is yet.
Yeah,
it's odd timing, too, because they have not yet resolved a lot of the back order issues. A lot of the new subscribers from three months ago still haven't received their MoviePass cards yet. There's still lots of glitches and bugs in the app. So they haven't even resolved the primary problems with the company. And now they're trying to gain more subscribers and customers.
MoviePass is one of those companies that, like, they're doing almost everything wrong, but it's such a great deal that I don't care that their customer service is almost non-existent. I don't care that their app basically doesn't even work. You know, I don't care that the service I'm buying is basically bad because, you know, I get to go see more movies for a cheaper price.
Basically.
It's also interesting that they recently hinted at that they're planning, they have plans on doing a streaming service. So I'm wondering if they're trying to raise capital for that. Mm. But if their app is any judgment on or any indication on, you know, how their, you know, tech is going to go, or even their website. If you try to navigate around their website, it's like horrible. I can't imagine a streaming service going well from this company, but we'll have to see. I don't know. It might also be that they're trying to capture, you know, all these people that are want to do this for like Star Wars and the Oscar movies. You know, they aren't able to sign up for that $9.95 plan. They have to sign up for the year now. So, so they can't just buy it and then, you know, cancel it a month down the line after they've seen, you know, all 20 of the Oscar movies or whatever. Okay, also in the news, we've been talking about Ben Affleck possibly not playing Batman in Matt Reeves' upcoming standalone film, The Batman. Now a new rumor claims that Matt Reeves might have a backup plan, like Batman himself. Ben, what do we know?
So I want to point out up top, and I want to heavily stress this, that this is nothing more than a rumor right now. It comes from a YouTube show called The John Campia Show, where the host claims that he spoke with a couple of his sources and heard that Matt Reeves, who is the director of Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and War for the Planet of the Apes, he's directing the new solo movie called The Batman. These sources claim that Matt Reeves wants Jake Gyllenhaal to take on the role of Batman if Ben Affleck does not continue on in that role. So again, this is not a sure thing. Reportedly, there have been some conversations, according to this guy and his sources. But we basically just wrote about it on the site because it's sort of interesting to talk about and think about. We're certainly not taking it as fact at this point. But
and it does seem. It seems very clear to me that Ben Affleck is not interested in returning as this character for at least the longevity of it.
You know? And I mean,
at the very least, he's waffling back and forth.
Yeah, and like even I think it was this week he was like, I'm looking for a graceful and cool way to segue out of this. So like, you know, he's openly saying in the public now that he's he's not interested in playing this character for very long. So yeah, just sort of thinking ahead and wondering, assuming this is true, Jake Gyllenhaal, guys, that's kind of an interesting choice. I think he has an intensity that would really be great for Batman and sort of give that character a shot in the arm. After seeing Affleck in Justice League, I'm sort of done with his version of Batman. That sort of rage that he brought in Batman vs. Superman seems to be gone in Justice League. And without that, that character or his take on the character doesn't really do anything for me. It doesn't really
I kind of like the cranky old man up against, Flash and Aquaman being kind of the foil of that whole group. No,
I guess it didn't work as well for me as it seemed to have for you. I certainly understand where they're going for. But I just think, especially for a solo Batman movie, that's the whole point of this of Matt Reeves thing. Right. It's like it's supposed to be like a noir driven detective story. So I think Gyllenhaal, who has been really terrific in the last decade, I feel like he's like really reshaped himself as an actor with movies like End of Watch and Prisoners and Nightcrawler. I think he would be pretty great. And it's also kind of a cool little piece of trivia that Gyllenhaal actually auditioned for the role of Batman and lost out to Christian Bale when Batman Begins was in development. So that would be a nice little mirroring aspect with Henry Cavill, who also auditioned for Superman Flyby back in the early 2000s, didn't get that part, and then ultimately was cast in Man of Steel. So both of those guys would have that in common if this whole thing is even true in the first place, and if ultimately Jake Gyllenhaal does get cast as Batman.
This morning, Warner Brothers announced a title for the Fantastic Beasts sequel and also gave us the first look and a synopsis. HG, you wrote this up for the site. What is this title?
The new title for the Fantastic Beasts sequel is Fantastic Beasts: The Crimes of Grindelwald, which means it'll be focusing primarily on Gellert Grindelwald, the evil dark wizard played by now Johnny Depp, initially introduced as Colin Farrell. But sadly, he was revealed as a bleach blonde.
Let's pause here. this title is like the worst possible title. Like, why didn't they have Fantastic Beasts and the something? Like, it would have sounded kind of like the Harry Potter series. But this,
yeah, that would have been more parallel to the Harry Potter series. Now that I think about it.
and looking at this first look image, which we can talk about in a second, but you mentioned Johnny Depp. And I'm like looking at this image, just like, why is he still in this movie? Did anybody want him to be in this movie?
Well, he's a big box office actor, and they need a Hollywood actor to draw in the audience for this movie franchise that is not at all popular.
So, what else did we learn from this first look and synopsis?
So we learned some of the, I think we knew some of the actors who were coming in, but we learned some of the character descriptions for the new characters, who will be played by Zoe Kravitz, whose character Leta Lestrange was mentioned last movie. And there's also new characters played by Claudia Kim, who will be bringing a little bit of color as well into the film, who's Maledictus, a carrier of a blood curse that transforms her into a beast. There's Callum Turner as Newt Scamander's older brother. He is a war hero and head of the Auror office. And we also get to see Jude Law in costume for the first time as young Albus Dumbledore, looking very Dumbledorean in his beard and sleek coat. And we also learned that Ezra Miller is coming back. Well, we knew that he was returning for Fantastic Beasts, but he's up front and center in the cast photo for Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. So that means he will be more than just a mysterious character who appears maybe in the third act. He will be front and center. So that is interesting because his fate was quite left to mystery at the end of the first Fantastic Beasts. Actually, when I first saw it, I thought he had died, but it turns out he is not dead and will be playing a larger role in the Fantastic Beasts series.
And Ezra Miller's bowl cut does not look as bad in this photo, but Dumbledore does not look anything like I would have thought young Dumbledore would look like.
Everyone's very sensual. And they have very nice coats.
I think that says it all. Okay, let's move on from Fantastic Beasts to Marvel's Multiple Man, which is a comic book getting a movie.
Yes, so Deadline reports that a Multiple Man movie is being developed over at 20th Century Fox. So this is not a Marvel Studios movie, but it's a Fox movie under the Marvel banner. This character, Multiple Man, is one of the X-Men in the various incarnations of that comic. Wonder Woman screenwriter Alan Heinberg and longtime X-Men producer-writer Simon Kinberg are going to be producing this movie alongside James Franco, who is going to be starring as the title character. And I don't know anything about Multiple Man, but according to our very own Jacob Hall, who does, he says, in the Marvel Comics, Multiple Man is the codename of Jamie Madrox, a mutant with a double-edged superpower. Whenever he makes physical contact with anything, he creates a copy of himself, and then that clone can create a copy of itself, and so on. Naturally, this comes in handy in a fight, but it's a real pain in the butt if you want to live an ordinary life. So that is basically the breakdown of the character. This means that James Franco is going to be playing multiple roles in this movie, which is interesting because I feel like the real life James Franco would love to clone himself and, go off and make all sorts of different stuff since he's like one of the busiest people in Hollywood. It's also interesting that this is going to, we don't really know what the tone of this is going to be like, but Fox, has been really making some fascinating choices with their X-Men properties over the past year or so, with Deadpool and Logan, the upcoming New Mutants. So this could be just about anything, but it's probably not going to be a straight down the middle sort of boring X-Men adaptation. It's going to be something sort of fascinating and interesting. And, putting James Franco back in a superhero movie after the Spider-Man films, it's been a while for him. And this should be a cool, chance for him to play a bunch of different types of things in one movie.
Yeah, I was going to say that James Franco likes being in Marvel movies, but not being in the Marvel Cinematic Universe at all. this character seems very ripe for him to... It just seems like the kind of role that he would want to play. And, he's been doing a lot of more interesting work recently. So I think for a superhero film to attract him, I think is something worth noting.
Yeah, for sure.
HT, do you have any thoughts on this?
Nothing that you guys haven't pointed out. I don't know much about Multiple Man myself, but it sounds like a really intriguing premise. And I think that I agree with Ben. I think 20th Century Fox is doing a lot more interesting things with their X-Men movies, even if their main X-Men universe is a little bit of a mess. So I trust whatever side projects they have a lot more than Sony.
Well, I read the X-Men comics, and I don't even know who Multiple Man is. When I see Multiple Man, I just think of that Michael Keaton movie from, like, the 90s.
Multiplicity.
Multiplicity, yeah. I just picture that in my head.
I remember that movie. Yeah, the clone doppelganger movie, right? Or clones.
Yeah, I believe so. But moving on, because everybody was obsessed with cloning in the 1990s, from Jurassic Park to that, yeah. And there was Dolly the Sheep. I am old. Okay, moving on. We're going to do a reaction of the Rampage trailer. So if you have not seen the trailer, you can go watch it now. If you want to skip this reaction, which will be pretty brief, Future Peter will come in right now and tell you the time code that you can go to. Future Peter here. Go to 3035 to skip this Rampage trailer discussion. That's 3035. Okay, so the trailer for the Dwayne Johnson film Rampage, it's based on that classic video game series, which is basically just a rip of King Kong and Godzilla. It's in this trailer has come out. We didn't know what this was going to be. It's kind of weird because it starts off kind of like, almost feels like Dawn of the Planet or like Rise of the Planet of the Apes, but with Dwayne Johnson, and then it's kind of like it seems a lot less fun than I think a Rampage movie would be, and then it becomes ridiculous, and in the end, it just seems to me like they wanted to make King Kong, but not have to, you know, go through all the quote unquote boring story. Let's just F up New York City.
And throw Dwayne Johnson in there, too.
Yeah. Do you guys have any thoughts on this trailer?
HC, what do you think?
Well, I watched it just before we started recording this podcast, and I thought it was astonishing how this trailer seemed to be both the most Dwayne Johnson movie ever and a parody of every Dwayne Johnson movie. I really got just kind of vibes of that SNL skit in which they had Dwayne Johnson play the live action Bambi, which just took every element of the hyper masculine, super testosterone Dwayne Johnson films and injected it into this really banal quality, banal story, and times multiplied it by 10. And I thought it was hilarious. Just the whole time I was kind of like, oh wow, they're really doing this. It's just a gentle movie about a really muscular guy who speaks with apes, and then he becomes this hero who can kind of drive a helicopter, or fly a helicopter. So it was fun and ridiculous. I don't know if I would watch it. I would watch it with my movie pass. but yeah, it kind of didn't feel like a real movie to me. I never watched never played the Rampage video game, so I wasn't familiar with that, but I am familiar with the Dwayne Johnson movie formula.
Yeah, it looks pretty bad. Like, I don't know. I'm a big Dwayne Johnson fan, but he certainly knows how to make crappy movies every once in a while. And this, it just seems like imagine this in the hands of a different director, right? Like something about this to me just seems so leaned into the formula and so like we've seen this a million times before. I know Johnson, I think Brad Peyton directed this, who directed him in San Andreas, and then he directed him in Journey to the Mysterious Island or something like that, like 10 years ago. And Johnson is one of those guys who loves working with the same people over and over again. And his collaborations with Brad Peyton just seem like they might be great on the set, but like the movies that they make together are not the top tier Dwayne Johnson movies for me. So it just looks like an amalgamation of Jumanji. Like when this trailer opens, it looks like he was still on the set of Jumanji, and they were just like, "All right, let's
cross
over." What's
gonna happen when Jungle Cruise comes out? I feel like once those three movies comes out, someone is gonna be able to make a mashup film using footage of all three of those movies, and it will be, it will be the most Dwayne Johnson movie. I want to see that supercut.
Yeah, and then like even the helicopter thing, he's a helicopter pilot in San Andreas, so it seems like almost like this meta sort of joke. And I was like, guys, I don't know about this. This whole thing just looks the King Kong similarities are pretty blatant. I mean, I guess the game is so basic that it's just you play as the monsters and you try to destroy as many cities as possible.
The game is based on King Kong, so there's almost nothing to the game whatsoever.
Yeah, it's so simple. And this just seems like, I'm as much of a Dwayne Johnson fan as I am, I'm not looking forward to this one.
You know what? I wish this movie looked like more fun, because I would like to just be in a city while these monsters are destroying it. Like, that could be fun, but this seems like it's trying to be more of a story than it needs to be, and more, I don't know.
It's not movie enough.
Yeah, it needs to be more pulpy.
Yeah.
Yeah, give it to like an indie filmmaker who has like you know, a different idea of like where to put the camera, or some way to like some angle on this kind of story that we haven't really seen before, instead of something like this, which is just like, yep, this is exactly what you expect it to be. So I don't know. I guess there's something to be said on a business level for delivering you know, something for where people are familiar with it, but from a creative standpoint, it just doesn't seem like it's taking any risks at all.
And tell me this, because we've had the spoiler discussion going on in the podcast, and you know, this whole trailer, I'm like, oh my god, there's only two monsters in New York City. That seems like so subdued for Hollywood to do. Do you know what I mean? Like, why aren't they throwing all the monsters in New York, or all these creatures in New York City, and then the end of the trailer reveals a giant lizard creature coming from the...
Yeah, it's like a 100-foot crocodile or something, or 100-yard. I think it's supposed to be a crocodile that's as big as a football field.
Yes. So my question to you is, that seems like it's probably a late-in-the-film reveal. Like, did that feel a little bit spoilerish? Do you not care because you don't even care about this movie?
Partially that, and then the other part was like, I was sort of waiting for it to come along, because anyone who knows anything about Rampage knows that there are those three creatures. It's like a wolf, a gorilla, and a lizard, like a crocodile-esque kind of thing. So I don't think it's really a spoiler to say that all of those things are in the movie, even though the structure of this trailer does seem to indicate that we aren't going to see much of the crocodile until later in the film.
Yeah, I feel like you can't market the movie without all three of the monsters on the poster. So maybe it isn't. I don't know. I mean, our line on the podcast and on the site is, if it's in the trailers, it's worth, you know, discussing without a spoiler warning. Mm-hmm. So, and that does it for our discussion of the Rampage trailer. Let's get into the mailbag today. Sherwin writes in, with the release of the new Deadpool 2 teaser today, I was just curious what you all thought of that style of trailer. He basically asks, you know, these trailers with no footage from the actual movies themselves. And I mean, I can't speak for you guys, but I used to love these kind of trailers. Hollywood used to make these kind of teaser trailers way more often than they do now. Like, it seems to happen very much less. Do you guys have any opinions on trailers without any footage from the film itself?
Well, I love it.
Yeah, the Deadpool teaser actually had like flashes of footage from the new movie, but they were so brief that you couldn't really make anything of it. But yeah, I enjoy that, because I think it actually builds anticipation more. Sorry, Ben, go ahead.
Yeah, no. Exactly. I was just going to say the same thing. I like it a lot, and especially as somebody who, you know, I don't really like watching all of the trailers for something. So if I can see a teaser that doesn't even have any footage in it at all, then it does a lot of the heavy lifting of like setting the tone for what to expect, which is what I want out of a teaser anyway. So yeah, it's cool. I wish they did it a little bit more often these days.
So I thought we'd take this opportunity to kind of listify this and talk about our favorite movie trailers or teaser trailers that don't show much footage from the film itself. I'll start this off with Jurassic Park, which I'm not sure if you remember this teaser trailer, but it kind of like, I remember it like is talking about a mosquito hundreds of millions of years ago, and it basically shows them looking at the mosquito under the microscope, and it's like this big build up to the reveal that they have, you know, recreated dinosaurs from their DNA. It's a fascinating trailer with no footage from the actual film, I don't believe. And I wish more trailers were like that. It like really got you excited watching it. I don't know. I just wish like someone like Rian Johnson or, you know, J.J. Abrams was given the budget and the time on set of like a Star Wars movie to, you know, film something like that for one of these kind of movies, because I don't think people want to see the trailers and be spoiled. You know, not that the trailers are spoiling anything, but, you know, I think like a big event movie. This really works well with big, huge event movies.
So my choice is kind of a cheat because mine does have some footage from the movie, but it's more of a music video almost. My first choice is Where the Wild Things Are, which is Spike Jonze's movie. And it's basically a music video featuring Arcade Fire's song Wake Up. And it kind of acts as like a tonal poem. No dialogue is really uttered except for like one or two lines. And it really builds the sort of emotional response that you get when you watch the film later, but you don't know that when you first see the trailer. It's one of my favorite trailers in general, but I think it's really nice because it doesn't reveal much of the story. It just reveals a bunch of footage and some more surreal aspects of it and how it relates to like childhood and everything. So that's one of my favorite ones of the teasers that are more mysterious.
And that's one of those trailers that I think is arguably better than the movie itself. It's just like such a piece of like art.
It is.
Ben, how about you?
My first pick is Terminator 2 Judgment Day. There's this really cool teaser where it's basically a factory line of the different models, the T-800 models being constructed. And it's none of this footage is actually in the movie at all. But I guess James Cameron gave Stan Winston, the makeup special effects guru, like $500,000 to create this teaser before any of Terminator 2 was actually shot yet. And it's basically just like an exoskeleton sort of going down the line and getting constructed and put together. And then it finally gets put into this this one last box, and Arnold steps out and he looks at the camera and his eyes turn red and he says, "I'll be back." And and then it's just like T2 summer 1991 kind of thing. So, I just like it's basically as simple as, this thing that you loved is coming back and the actor that you loved is also coming back. And it's just it's a cool kind of vibe. Yeah. I liked it.
The next one on my list I like because it's just so different than any trailer, out there today or any trailer in the last, 30 years. And that is the trailer for Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. And I'm not sure if you guys have seen this, but it's basically Hitchcock it's a 6.5 minute trailer. I can't imagine this playing before a movie. It's a 6.5 minute trailer, and it's him walking around the set of Psycho and explaining what it is. And there's like not any footage of it. Like, I think there might be some screenshots. It's just, if you have not seen this, I will link it in the show notes. You should check it out because it's like, why isn't there like a filmmaker like Spielberg or Abrams or, Scorsese doing something like this? It's just so interesting and so different, and I don't know. It's just cool. H.C., what's up on your list next?
So my next one is the Lilo and Stitch teaser trailer. If you guys remember, some of the viral marketing for Lilo and Stitch involved the character of Stitch, which was the little blue alien that wreaked havoc everywhere he went, crashing into some of the most famous scenes from other Disney movies. So he interrupts the flying carpet ride for Aladdin. He interrupts Little Mermaid's song, Part of Your World. And they basically animate whole new sequences where these characters get like pushed around by him and then get angry and like slap him or something. Well, not bodily abuse, I'm sorry. They get angry at him and like splash water or something like that. And I remember watching these teasers in like the little previews that they show in front of the VHSs for various Disney movies. And I was like, what the hell is this as a kid? And it's probably a little bit corny and weird now, but I really liked it as a child. And Lilo and Stitch actually became one of the better off-brand Disney movies. So it's a really good teaser trailer that makes use of Disney's most famous characters as well as kind of poking fun at it.
Ben, what is up next on your list?
Mine is the teaser for Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, which is basically just like 2 minutes of behind-the-scenes footage of them making the movie. And it ends with them saying, like, production is underway. The film comes out, in whatever year it was, 1989 or whenever it came out. So it's like the, you've probably heard the famous story about Harrison Ford riding the horse in that movie and his hat, the fedora flying off all the time, and him like physically stapling the hat to his own skull. So he does that. That footage is in this teaser, and you can watch him do it. And then it's just a lot of cool like behind the scenes shots of explosions, and it shows you know, Spielberg and Lucas on the set and everything. And it has a couple flashes of the actual shots that you, the final shots that you see in the movie itself. But for the most part, it's like alternate angles. It's like, you know, somebody else with the camera filming the huge camera rigs filming the stunts or whatever it is. So, yeah, just like, you know, it's like a throwback. They don't really do anything like that anymore. And it more so almost like announced that this production was happening, instead of like, here's the, you know, the glitzy sort of, you know, a slickly edited final trailer kind of thing. So
for sure.
Yeah, I like that one.
Next up, I'll give my last two, because we got to go more quick fire here. One of mine is Godzilla, the 1998 movie. Who was that? Roland Emmerich, I think.
Yes.
And there was this teaser trailer that had some kids getting a tour of a museum in New York City. And there's this they're looking at this big skeleton, a fossil skeleton of a dinosaur. And basically Godzilla's foot comes through the ceiling of the building and crushes it. And it's just like showing the size and scope and, you know, kind of announcing that this movie's happening. And it was kind of epic at its time. The, you know, the movie wasn't as good as the trailer. Pixar used to do these incredible teaser trailers. They did one for The Incredibles, which had Mr. Incredible in his office. And it kind of like gave you kind of like the feeling of a superhero in his mundane environment. And, you know, his wife calls him for dinner and he's trying to get his suit on or whatever, and you know, he's too big to fit into it, but he, you know, wants to try on his old suit. I don't know, it's more of a, I guess, a tone piece for what Brad Bird was trying to do with the movie and give you an idea of what it was going to be than anything else. And it was, you know, footage that is actually isn't in the movie itself. HD, what is your final choices?
My final pick is kind of another semi-music video. It's David Fincher's The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. So the teaser trailer for it is set to Led Zeppelin's Immigrant Song. And it's one of the best, actually the best use of Immigrant Song, I will say that, in a trailer. And it's just extremely quick and rapid fire cutting. It's really intense. You see flashes of footage that don't really make sense if you haven't seen the Swedish version or read the book. And it's a really well-made trailer that I actually like to go back to sometimes and just watch it. Because even though the final movie is really great, the trailer itself is just another one that's on another level, I feel like.
Nice.
Ben, what are your final picks?
Yeah, I have two more really quickly. One of them is a teaser for Back to the Future, which, Peter, I'm sure you've seen this one a million times, but it's Marty McFly sort of like walking through, like basically down a desert street, and he gets inside the DeLorean, and it's a ton of shots of like insert close-up shots of all of the doodads and gadgets that are inside of the DeLorean. And then it shows Marty with his reflective sunglasses and a voice says, "How far are you going?" And he's like, "About 30 years. And then like the theme song kicks in and you get to see the fire tracks and all that stuff at the very end. So that one was kind of cool. And then my last one is one for Hook, which is another Spielberg movie that I love. I know a lot of people don't like that movie, but I'm a big fan of Hook. And the teaser I had never seen before.
How is it that you like Hook but not Goonies? Okay, go on.
You don't like Goonies, Ben?
No, I don't. God. Man, I'm like super negative on this episode. But anyway, Hook. Guys, I got a lot of love for Hook. I'll give you that one. So this teaser I had never seen before today, before researching for this prompt. And it has Dustin Hoffman's Captain Hook, but you don't actually see him. The whole thing in that movie is that his hook gets like detached and he can attach other things in place instead of the hook. So he attaches a magnifying glass and then he looks over. He basically holds a magnifying glass over this intricately drawn map of Neverland, and it basically like hovers over all of the credits of the big stars who are going to be in the movie. And John Williams' score plays in the background, and that's a big part of why I love this, is because I'm a huge, huge fan of Williams' score for that movie. So just being able to, I like I said, I'd never seen that before, but imagining what it would have been like to see this teaser before having seen the movie and like get that first real glimpse of what Williams was going to do with that score is pretty fantastic. So yeah, I like that one a lot too.
A few years ago, I wrote a article on the best teaser trailers of all time. I will link that in the show notes. You should go check that out. It has a lot more than the ones we mentioned. Like, there's this Jaws trailer that just, like, is underwater footage, not from the movie. It's cool. There's a ton of examples in there. You should check it out. If you have any questions to send to us in the mailbag, send them to peter@slashfilm.com, and please leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention it on the air. You can find more of my work at slashfilm on Twitter, slashfilm.com. You can find Ben at Ben Pears on Twitter. You can find HT at HTranBui on Twitter. You can find this podcast published every weekday on iTunes, Google Play, all the popular podcast apps. You can please go to iTunes, give us a rating, give us a review. That helps us out quite a bit. Spread the word, tell your friends, and we'll see you tomorrow.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.